Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. On today's episode of the podcast, I'm bringing Andy from the Guardian Project podcast on to talk about balancing content creation, playing Magic, as well as things completely outside of Magic the Gathering. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce and welcome Andy to the podcast. Welcome, welcome.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited that we're finally getting to do this.
Yeah, it's been so long since we met playing on, I believe, the Magic Gazubi podcast game stream. That's been a long time.
It's been a long time since you took me out of the game because I remember you beat me.
So for those who didn't know, Andy probably should have swords to plowshared my veto instead of my psychosis crawler. So, yeah. But, you know, those are the kinds of things that we learn. I also remember that I completely boned the next turn or two and I completely lost the game. So, you know, mistakes happen. We learn. That's what's so great about EDH is you make a mistake once and you learn from it. You move on.
Exactly.
All right. So, again, both of us are content creators. We both have a podcast. We've been doing this for, what would you say, 2 years, I'd say?
2 years now. Can you believe that? So I am one half of the Guardian Project podcast. We are a weekly podcast that talks about all things Magic the Gathering, but mostly Commander. We release new episodes every Wednesday, so you can find us anywhere where podcasts are found. We're on Twitter at Guardian Pod, and you can check out our website, guardianprojectpodcast.com. And then we do have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheGuardianProject. When we were streaming during quarantine, all of our videos got posted there. And then I'm personally on Twitter at ATFlory. I'm very active on social media. So if you ever want to chat with me or get some thoughts from me, just at me.
Definitely, definitely. And I will recommend the Guardian Project podcast to anyone who's listening to my show who hasn't had an opportunity to listen to these two fine gents talk about Magic. It's a really great experience, and I'm so glad to have you on here today.
Thank you. It's been a really fun experience for the last 2 years. So a couple of weeks ago, we hit episode 100, and then obviously with episode 104, we knew that we were officially at 2 years. And just recently, we released episode, actually today we released episode, or the day we're recording this, we released episode 107. So there's plenty of content if you're looking for a new podcast. Starting around episode 20 is when we switched our content specifically to be Commander. Before that, we were kind of talking about all things Command or just all things Magic. But now we focus more on Commander because it is our favorite format, although we still talk about, you know, everything else.
Sure, sure. And that's really the same for me is if you go back and look at the back catalog of my podcast, I was rambling a lot in those early days, and it took a while to figure out what my niche was. And once I found that, I've really been able to turn the podcast around, just have a lot of great experiences, and just really feel like I'm getting somewhere as a creator.
Yeah, and it's really easy to speak about something when you have that experience behind it, right? So it's one thing to talk about new cards coming out from a set or talk about cards that people, you know, are kind of on the hype train for, you know, Ragavan recently from Modern Horizons 2, or when we had cards from Jumpstart coming out, right? And people were very excited about discard themes or mill themes or unicorn decks, right? So it's one thing to talk about it and just be excited. It's another thing to speak from experience, right? When you actually build the deck or you lose to the deck or you've played against the deck. And I think that once we started talking about things that we had personal experiences with, it really opened up a new world to us as far as content creation went and the experience itself. And people can relate, right? Can relate to your really fun play with a Vorl of the Whole Clade deck, right? You're like, I put 150 counters on a creature. That's awesome. But it's another thing to just say, this would be really cool to do. So we've really evolved, you know, our content when we started focusing on things that we've actually done with less theoretical, but they're kind of just tied together now.
Definitely. So again, on the topic of podcasting, on the topic of content creation, it's probably well known amongst people who listen to podcasts that not all of us are able to make our living doing content creation. I know I speak from experience. I do have a full-time 40-hour week job that does pay my bills. And it's definitely something where I have to work in my spare time, my free time on the podcast because I enjoy doing it. Again, I don't really make any money off the podcast, but that's not really the point. I just enjoy the opportunity to meet new people, just talk about magic, because magic has given me a lot to talk about in the last year, year and a half. It's why I started the podcast. And again, I'm not sure about your situation, but I believe it is the same there.
It is. So I spend the majority of my work time in the mortgage servicing industry. And then this is actually a hobby for both of us. So my co-host Mike works in seatbelt development, just mechanical engineering there. Mm-hmm. This is not something that we do full time as our career, although we would love that. We do this because we love it. And we certainly have had our own experiences with balancing work and life and content creation, right? It's not something where I can just sit down and spend 8 hours and go, okay, great. I have the perfect agenda. I know what we're going to talk about. It's, you know, I think about it for 20 minutes when I'm, you know, not in a meeting. And then, you know, some nights I'll throw together an agenda. And then other nights, you know, we'll get together on a Discord call and say, okay, I think we're solid. And then we record once a week on Monday nights. So that's when we record. But, you know, it's really fitting it in to our life, right? You know?
Yeah. And that's really what I wanted to touch on this today is I've noticed that a lot of other creators, not just us, have started to talk about content burnout as a interesting and kind of frightening phenomenon in the creator community, where we feel as creators that there's just so much stuff to talk about, especially for those who do like or do center a lot of their focus of their topics around the spoilers. Well, we've basically been in spoiler season since, I don't know, Zendikar Rising, I guess?
Non-stop content release. That is the world we live in now.
Yeah, and how do we, as creators, try to keep our heads on straight when there's just so much stuff we want to talk about, but we also have to balance out work and other social obligations that we may have to deal with, where, again, we can't spend 24/7 thinking about magic. Obviously, we would, again, going off what you're saying, is we would all love in our own way to be doing what the professor from Tulane Community College does, or the fine folks over at Loading Ready Run, what they do. But, you know, it's not really feasible for us to be able to do that. So, you know, when it feels like there is a lot of information just being thrown at us constantly from Wizards, there's definitely a challenge, I'd say, as being a creator, where we're just trying to figure out exactly how do we stay true to what we started our content on while also trying to, you know, just meet the trends, I suppose, for lack of a better term. How do we try to keep ourselves above water when it feels like every new day there's a new set coming out, or new secret lair, or new interesting card that's just blowing up the internet? I mean, just on the day we're recording here, just we've seen how many new reveals of cards from the new AFR set, new D&D set. It's so much to keep track of. It's difficult.
Yeah, you know, this is the MTG in Quarantine podcast, so I think we certainly need to, at least from my perspective, circle back to the, you know, to quarantine. Here in Michigan, we have started to remove some of those restrictions. So the world is, at least our world here, is starting to move back to what we feel was normal, right, in 2019. but during quarantine, we kind of evolved, right? So we had, or adapted, I guess, is a different, mm-hmm. is a better term, right? So we recorded our podcast remotely. So fortunately, we have a very lovely podcast editor, Ryan Nichols. So if anybody is interested, I can certainly provide that contact information if you are looking for somebody. But it's a really nice thing that we had somebody who knew how to do this, and we had recording equipment because we were streaming. So during quarantine, we started streaming every Thursday on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ATFlory. So we were streaming Commander content every Thursday. We were recording the podcast every Monday, releasing that every Wednesday. So we had two things coming out. It was a lot of things that we're publishing on YouTube, publishing them on Patreon, sharing them on social media. And but at that time, there wasn't anything else to do, right? We were all at home. We couldn't really go anywhere. And so as the world kind of started to open back up, folks' work schedules changed from working at home to going back into the office. We realized that streaming every single Thursday, as you mentioned before, the content creation burnout, streaming every single Thursday and recording a podcast every single week was quite a bit of work. And as our priorities were kind of changing, right? So work is certainly important, right? You have to pay the bills to keep your lights on and you know, make sure you pay for all your bills. We realized we weren't going to be able to sustain streaming every single Thursday. So we changed it from every Thursday to every other Thursday, I believe. And then recently we have actually switched to recording Commander gameplay and then editing that for our YouTube channel. So we are currently working on edited content, similar vein to MTG Mudsta, Playing with Power, content creators like that. Mm-hmm. Content that we like to watch, right? You know, we like to watch edited gameplay. The content that's currently on our YouTube channel is really VOD in VOD videos from our Twitch that are really not edited, right? So they're a few hours long. So we're working on editing and that's what we're doing right now. But we certainly had to work on balancing content creation with real life. And that meant changing our stream schedule and changing the way that we release content on YouTube.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you do bring that up because I know just on my personal level where when I'm busy or when I'm not really able to get to the podcast, sometimes it kind of feels nice, actually, to not feel like I have to record a podcast. Because, again, even though we're not large podcasts by any stretch of the imagination,
sure,
yeah, we still feel the need that we want to get on the mic. We want to talk. We want to say our piece because we feel like that's what we do. That's what's interesting. And I guess just it's been interesting to me recently. I've actually missed a couple of weeks due to various things in the last few months. And it's been kind of nice, I suppose, having a bit of time away from the microphone. It's hard to describe, but again, just going back to the concept of burnout, that sometimes other things get in the way. And how do we try to balance those things, work and the podcast? It's a challenging proposition, honestly, and
really
something
is.
that we have to reckon with no matter what, especially when things come up that are really outside of our control.
Exactly. So I travel for work. I certainly know that my co-host, our podcast editor, we all, right, we're juggling three lives, right? So three worlds have to intersect once a week. And we've had it where, you know, someone goes on vacation, right? Or someone has to travel for work. I'm talking about me. And so we know that we record on Mondays, but there have been some weeks where, you know, we like to set the expectation that we're going to have a new episode out every single week. So we have done it in the past where we had episodes recorded that were not related to anything that was time, or I guess like date or time sensitive, right? So mm-hmm. we like talking about new content or the hot gossip at the appropriate time, right? So if you want to talk about AFR spoilers, you want to talk about them now. That's Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. Who's that coming out? You want to talk about them, you know, right after the cards are released. But if you just want to talk about the history of Planeswalkers, right, you could do that. You could do that at any time, right? And so we've had episodes before where we recorded ahead of time, so they were kind of in the hopper, right? So if we ever had a week where someone was sick or we were exhausted or someone had to travel or something came up, it's we have this episode ready to go and we can release it. So it's certainly something that we have thought about and we are fully prepared for. But we have had weeks where we realized, oh, shoot, next week, so-and-so can't make it, so we need to record today, and then we need to record in 3 days a second episode. And those weeks are insane to record. But you know what? We really have such a great community that we have built with the Guardian Project podcast. Our Discord channel is public, so anybody can join it. It's actually our pinned tweet on Twitter. If anybody's ever interested and they want to reach out to us, you can email us at guardianprojectpodcast.com. We can certainly get you an invite. We've got a really, really great bunch of folks in there. We've got Commander Games that are firing pretty much every day at this point. But we owe it, right? We feel like we owe it to them to make sure that they've got content every week. And we've been very proud that we have not missed a week in, I don't think we've missed a week in over a year at this point. I'm going to knock on the glass table I'm sitting in front of right now.
Well, congratulations for being able to really stick to that schedule. It's a real commitment, as I've come to learn ever since, honestly, on the day that I'm recording this, I actually just hit my 1 year podcastversary, I suppose. So I understand completely how difficult it is to be able to keep that to that sort of schedule. I have mostly kept to that schedule in the last 6 months after I decided I was going to start trying to do this once or twice a week, and that's still been very difficult. So the fact that both of you have been able to figure out a way to be able to get your episodes in on time, even when things are looking a little dicey, that's so commendable.
And thank you so much. And congratulations on hitting 1 year. I will say, it is such a good feeling when you hit a year. We did a 1 year anniversary episode as well. I just listened to yours today. To get us organized, so in my life, I mentioned I work in mortgage servicing. I'm a relationship manager, so my job is to make sure that people are happy and people are organized. And I am one of those people that, you know, keeps the meeting minutes, has all these spreadsheets, has all these organized documents. And I realized, you know, I have some professional skills that could really make our lives much easier with the podcast. So, you know, we utilize a Google Calendar now, so we plan out our episodes in advance. We have an agenda template, so we populate it every week. It's much easier when you get organized, and that, I think, honestly, has helped significantly instead of starting from scratch every week. And we just really just continue to evolve that way. And that has made it significantly easier to do this every single week once we got organized.
Oh yeah, definitely. Content creation, even if it's not our job, still requires us to have a basic concept of time management, understanding of the content we want to talk about. And just the same kind of workflow process that you have in a regular job. It's just we're, in theory, talking about something we enjoy doing, whereas, unfortunately, we can't always say that about work all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, again, going off of our discussion here for the last 10, 15 minutes, it's how do we balance trying to create content and play games? I know both of you mentioned this. You play a lot of games in your Discord, or you've at least set up a lot of games in your Discord. And do you ever really find that sometimes, because you're creating content, sometimes you're taking the time that you may otherwise want to spend playing the game and using that on the podcast? Just out of curiosity, because it's definitely something I have experienced on my end, is I've recorded on some days where I'd rather just kick back and try to find a pickup game of Magic, and it's very difficult sometimes to try to balance the two. If either of you experienced that kind of difficulty?
Absolutely. So, you know, thinking about life before we really started recording, right? So I would play in a Commander League on Monday nights. I would play in casual Commander games on Friday nights. And then on Sunday afternoons, we would have one of our LGSs would have like a commander just afternoon, right? So I was playing two nights a week plus on Sunday afternoons. And then we started recording the podcast. So we started recording on one of those nights when we were playing, but I was still playing on Friday and Sunday, right? Because we record on Mondays. And then when the pandemic hit, right? So now we're not playing at all. We relied on playing through Spelltable, which is a really fantastic program. And if you are not playing on Spelltable, it just makes Commander so much easier. But there are nights where our Discord is just hopping and there are, you know, six people looking to play a game on Monday, or we've got three people looking and they're looking for one more person. And if we weren't recording in the next hour, one of us certainly would have jumped in to play a game. But we do record all of our actual Commander gameplay throughout the year. So last year I did, in 2020, I played 366 games of Commander. So I made it a point to continue to play the game. This year, I'm not on track to play 365. I say 366 last year because it was supposed to be the year of 365. And then everybody in our Discord reminded me that it was a leap year and that I wasn't going to play one game for every single day of the year. So I had to jump in and play one more game, which was very funny. But this year, I did not put the pressure on to play 365 games. But right now I'm at 167 this year. I make it a point to play two or three games a week, which I still do. And but there definitely are times when I'd rather not be working on an agenda or actually recording and just hanging out with the friends that we've made through the show.
Oh, yeah. So what's actually, it's funny that you bring up the 366 games last year, because I actually found that an inspiration for the play log that I've actually been keeping. That was a topic of an episode just a couple episodes before this one, where I've been keeping track of how I do in each game. And I believe I'm on pace to hit far less than 366 games this year. I think I'm on pace for about 215, maybe.
That's
which is
great.
Nowhere near enough.
But that's still great, though. You know, even if if you think about it, that means you played a game at least every other day, right? And my point True. Was to try to play one. But I think now that we've kind of grown to adopt this online play group that we've met, right? So we've played on streams with plenty of other folks. We've had folks on our stream. Games can go pretty quickly. And so you can, playing remotely, you can get 2, 3, 4 sometimes games in a night, depending on, obviously the power level. But you find that just the volume of games that you play is probably more than you thought you would play. But having the pressure of trying to hit 365, I mean, you feel that pressure as you start getting towards the second half of the year.
Yeah, I can only imagine trying to play that many games, because effectively, are you necessarily having fun at that point? Because you're trying to play that many games for a reason, but yeah.
The answer is no. And I even mentioned it on the Guardian Project podcast. Did I love that I did it? Yes. I achieved the goal. I can say that I did the thing, and I am part of the 365. Well, I'm going to say I'm part of the 366 club. But at the end, I would say the last 50, 60 games, they were absolutely a chore. It was like, oh my gosh, if I don't play three games by the end of the week, I'm not going to make it. So I jump on and say, you guys, I need to play something, and I need to play something fast. Please play something that will end games quickly, right? Like, please don't play a control deck, or let's not play Pillow Fort. So I certainly had to adapt that, right? So it does affect my numbers, because there's an entire thread on my personal page that I have actually pinned on Twitter, so you can check out all of my stats, commanders that I played the most, what my win rate was, my most played decks, my least played decks. But I do think that it significantly affected those stats by just forcing myself to get to 366 games. And I think you're right. At the end, were they all fun? Probably not. Well, I can say not all of them were fun. Were the majority? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at your stats right now, because I forgot this was here. It's very interesting to see how, again, since I'm doing the same thing, but I have like three times as many decks that I've been cycling through, just because I've had more time in working from home. So that has allowed me to at least offset some of the challenges of trying to balance creation and playing the game. But again,
sure,
I spend almost more time building and thinking than I do playing. It's weird.
Yeah, I think so. Last year, the deck that I had played the most was Jerahd Golgari Lichlord, and it's funny, it had a 50% win rate, which I did not anticipate. Right, I don't check my stats on my games, but I played 26 games and I won 13 and I lost 13.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really fun to look at these, because I also find that I played against more commanders last year alone than I had ever played against just playing in a local play group. as well.
Well, of course, because again, there are just so many legends. There's what, 1,500 now that are legal commanders. It's crazy that you can, and more come out with each set. So
exactly. Wow. And some of those sets come out with like 15. And so last year I played against 321 unique different commanders or commander partner pairings. And only 74 of those I played against five or more times individually, obviously with our individual play groups. At the beginning of 2020, before everything went into lockdown, I certainly played a couple of games against some of those commanders multiple times. But I played against 128 unique commanders one single time in my journey to 366. So, I mean, 321 unique decks is what I played against. I mean, I saw a huge swath of strategies. And it was wild. And I wouldn't take it back. Would I do it again? Probably. Yeah, I'd probably do it again. But I think I would take a year or two off before I try to hit 365 again.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And you easily would have hit that number with me if you just played me like 10 times, because I'd bring out 10 different decks that probably no one else plays with. It's something that I pride myself on. Like, for instance, the game that I participated in where we were playing, I was playing my beloved Mono Black Kothafed deck, which if you haven't heard about it by now, listen to the episode on it. It's really fun. It's a really stupid deck, but I just adore it because it's silly. I mean, I run the Tron lands in there for no reason except they're fun. And it's just, it's a fun deck and just kind of a funky little strategy for a commander that no one knows anything about. But yeah, it's interesting that you ran into that many unique commanders. Again, going off just how open this format is that we have the most powerful commanders. I'm sure you dealt with the top commanders on EDH Rec. I'm sure you faced a lot of Golos decks, a lot of Marin decks, Joyra, just, you know, going Kenrith, going on down the line. But it's you probably also faced a lot of less popular commanders too, I would assume.
I did, you know, that actually what's funny, and I'll go through some of the stats real quick. The top 10 commanders that I played against in 2020 were Otrimi the Ever Playful, which obviously that commander deck from Ikoria had come out that year, so I know it was very popular. Mm-hmm. Slimefoot the Stowaway, Yarak the Desecrated, Nin the Pain Artist, which is a local playgroup. Okay, so that deck is not. Clothis, God of Destiny, funny enough, that was in my top 10. Morophon, Golos, Sig River Cutthroat, a Rayhan and Ravos partner deck, and then Nicol Bolas the Ravager. So those 10 decks were the ones that I played against more than any other deck last year, which it's so funny, just, you know, just goes to show how local play groups really affect how you build and play this game.
Oh yeah, I talk about it all the time that my local play group that I play with, I guess I always kind of build my decks to just make sure I can support the meta that we have, mm-hmm. just because I don't want to rock the boat. I did talk about this on my playlog episode a little bit ago. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, definitely I highly recommend you listen to that, because it goes into some of my thought process about how I'm utilizing my playlog as a dynamic and flexible way to see what decks of mine are doing very well against my playgroup, and maybe I shouldn't play them as often because, you know, I feel bad when I win a considerable amount of time against them. So I'm more willing to put those decks away and bring out other ones that don't necessarily do as well but are more balanced. I mean, I have a couple of ones that are currently undefeated this year because I don't play them much, but they've beaten my playgroup every time I played them. I don't really like that.
I did definitely notice that I had a couple of decks that had very high win rates. Jota, Archmage Eternal, won 75% of its games.
Ouch.
I played a pauper game of Commander. So I built an Aven Wind Guide deck that is an eternalized commander that gives tokens. Does it give flying and vigilance or just vigilance? I can't remember exactly. I didn't play it very often. But that had 100% win rate because I only played it one time. So I would say that one's an outlier. But I had also played in some commander leagues, right? So there was some money involved. So we all kind of wanted to try to play to win. Mm-hmm. And I was playing an Edric Spymaster of Trest extra turns deck. But okay. It was playing against other decks that were also trying to do some very powerful things, and that one won 72% of its games. So I certainly understand there are some decks that I have that I don't pull out for regular games. I pull them out for more high powered games. But I did start to tune some of my decks down. So the Locust God I used to run some fast mana in there. I had a Mana Crypt. I had a Mana Vault. I own a Grim Monolith, and it was in there for a while. I pulled them all out because it was just too consistent. So I certainly have evolved over the last year, and I'm thinking my tracking commander for the year stats are going to be significantly different this year, which I'm very excited to share. And we're already halfway through the year, so we've got an episode coming up checking in on how it's been going.
Oh, definitely. Actually, now that I think about it, I'm going to have to maybe do something like that a little bit later. I know I just talked about it on my podcast, but
yeah.
Of course, yeah, on the other episode, but I didn't really go into a whole lot of specifics on there. I mean, if for anyone who is interested in at least where I am at the moment, I have a lot of decks that are doing okay. I mean, my most played decks at this point for the year are Kothafed and Karn, actually. Not sure how that happened. But,
nice.
You know, mono brown, mono colorless going on there with three wins. I'll take it.
I love that. That's great. I think right now my most played deck for the year, and I haven't actually pulled the numbers, but I have, looking at it right now, I've played it 13 times, is Niambi Esteemed Speaker. It's a legendary Matters deck. So of those 13 games, I've won four of them, and this is one of my newest favorite decks. So can't wait to share all of this information halfway through and then towards the end of the year.
Yeah, it's just interesting, I guess, going off of this, that keeping track of the games that we have played has, in a way, I guess, affected how we build and play decks. Again, when I'm looking at my numbers here, not only am I looking at decks that I should probably sideline when I'm playing with my local play group, but also allows me to kind of just see the health of the other decks, and then especially trying to make the difficult decisions of, do I eventually want to cut this deck out of the lineup entirely because it's not doing well and I just don't enjoy playing it?
Yeah, I've used the information to determine how well I'm doing. So I'm also tracking the commanders that I'm playing against, the turn order. So if I, for me, just personally, if I went first, second, third, or fourth, mm-hmm. I do certainly have some games that are not four-man pods. So I've got three, and I do have some 1v1 games. But I track to determine whether or not it, I mean, I'm going to extrapolate to determine whether or not it actually mattered if I went first or second versus third or fourth. Mm-hmm. I haven't done any of that yet, but I also keep just some brief notes to say, here's how this person won, or this game was really great, or this was pretty rough because, I don't know, there were six board wipes. You know, I'm making that up there.
Sure.
But I also keep just some notes so you can kind of add context, right? Because I'm not going to remember all 167 games that I've played so far this year. But once you read it, sometimes you do just remember what it was that happened in that game. I mean, the last time we played together had to have been at least 6 months ago. And
yeah.
I still remember it like it was yesterday.
Well, it was pretty memorable, I suppose, just because
exactly.
That one giant blowout play. And then it's because of that giant blowout play that I actually remember that game fairly well, too, in the fact that I still haven't really gotten over how I completely bungled it later and I lost. Where, again, for full disclosure for people listening in, I could have recast a card I had in my hand. I had the mana for it. I forgot play it, and only realized when I passed the turn that I had blown it, and that, of course, my hubris got me in the end, and I lost on that turn. So, you know, things happen, rocks fall, everyone dies, especially if you're MJ. But, you know, it's, yeah, I do a similar thing where I feel like if there's an interesting bit of the game that I want to remember, or, you know, some kind of thing happened that is different than how we typically end games, especially my play group, I like to put a note in there as well so that I can go back and at least remember, oh, hey, this was something really cool. What happened? Like on the 19th of April, where my group played 3 Voltron decks against each other, and in fitting fashion, the non-Voltron deck won.
Exactly. And, you know, it's really nice when you get to see the way that those games play out. And I always like to root for the underdog, too. Voltron, I feel like Voltron gets the short end of the stick all the time because they have to target a player, right? Because you want to get them to 21. And, you know, once there's enough blockers, it gets really difficult. But I always root for that commander damage. I love it. I love when you see that 21 3 times.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you saw it, but I did have a game against Zuby on his stream there. What was that, on the 12th of January, where I was playing a Voltron deck. And I did take out, did I take out everyone in that game? I think I might have. That was, yeah. So for anyone who thinks Voltron's not a viable strategy, it's just maybe they haven't tried hard enough. There are ways to win in Voltron. You just kind of have to be creative and really careful in your card choices, because it is a very difficult strategy to play. But if you have the right combination of cards, it can do quite well.
Exactly. You know, my co-host, Mike, has a Zergo Helm Smasher Voltron deck. And funny enough, it's themed after General Grievous from Star Wars specifically. So there's like a stipulation on top of the Voltron strategy. So it's like playing Voltron on hard mode. But the funny thing is that those artifacts just kind of work together. And I've seen it take pods down. And you just love to see when those underplayed cards or those cards you've never seen before just, you know, take the win. You're like, I don't even know what that card does. I've never seen it in my life. And I just got wrecked by it.
Oh, yeah. I love finding those kinds of cards. I also do a lot of those same kinds of commanders, too. Whenever I try to build a deck, I try to find the most popular commanders, dump that pile, and then find out what's at the bottom. And then I kind of go from there and start figuring out how can I build a deck around something that has a bit of a downside, but which could have significant upside if I put this in, or maybe if I put that in. And it's just kind of that fun puzzle. I know I've talked about this a lot before, but it's just trying to challenge yourself to do something a little different. I have more powerful decks, yes, but I remember my silly Kothafed deck. I remember my Karn deck that runs a whole bunch of really random artifacts I just have lying around in my long box. You know, those are the kinds of games that you remember, because I remember one game where I was about to lose everything with my Karn deck, and I throw in colorless counterspell. Well, no one expects that coming. So,
no one anticipates that. No.
And it was in regards to it wasn't Ruinous Ult. It may have been Ruinous Ultimatum. There's like counterspell in colorless.
Yeah.
yeah, playing a Warping Whale on that to counter it and saving the board for another turn, and then totally getting bonked on the head the next turn and dying.
It, you know, you gotta have a few answers, and I'm a big fan of counterspell, seeing as my favorite deck is a blue-white deck. I do play Noyandar Royal Shaper. It is kind of like that signature deck. I like to have answers. Although I'm not running Warping Whale, I do have some counter magic in there. You know, sometimes you gotta have it. You gotta make them try, and then you gotta stop it, right?
I do not like that. Stop right there. Just no counter spells here unless you're playing a mono colorless. No. No. But yeah, it's just interesting to see how we have evolved as deck builders and as players since quarantine started. I know personally for me, I've gotten much better at this game. Going into quarantine, I'm going to be quite honest. I sucked at Magic. I'd been playing only for about a year. My commander decks were loads of crap, honestly, because I didn't really focus them very well like I should have. And over time, I've learned, again, through my dealings with a lot of other creators, through getting them on the show, but also just thinking more about the game when I have free time, I've learned how to improve my game, improve my deck, see what works, see what doesn't work, tinker with things, but also not be afraid to take chances. I have a lot of fun little pet cards in each deck that don't necessarily do what they're supposed to all the time, but You know, I kind of live by the high risk, high reward philosophy sometimes when it comes to cards. So if you want something that's going to be streamlined, look like everyone else, well, I'm not going to have that level. I'm not going to have that deck. Just saying.
Sure. You know, over quarantine, trying to balance content creation with also listening to other people's content was you know, another, you know, that's a whole nother story, a whole nother. And I would say that what I learned during quarantine was editing. And Max from Commander Central has put it really well that he is like an editor, right? Or someone who tinkers with decks, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say I'm necessarily the best deck brewer, right? I've always worked from the philosophy of don't fix it if it isn't broken. Mm-hmm. And so I love EDHREC as a website. I kind of like starting seeing where people have taken decks before. You can see different themes. And so I like to start there, and then I start editing decks. And I think over quarantine, one thing that I have started to do is I logged all of my Commander decks. I am a huge, huge fan of Archidect. It's just a website that I use to log my decks. I started editing all of those decks and then utilizing my comment section to note specifically when each set comes out, cards that I'm adding, cards that I'm removing, with an actual description of what cards that I edited into my decks. And that's one thing that I've learned, but I had to learn how to balance that with all of my other content, right? Because there are some folks that don't edit their decks every time a set comes out, right? They make a deck and they say, I'm happy with where I am. I constantly am looking at new cards to potentially go into a deck and play testing. But working on trying to balance testing new decks in addition to just playing the game with content creation is a beast on its own.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's especially since we get so many sets. How do we try to, you know, keep track of every single card that's coming out, especially when we look past the big bomb rares and mythics and we're starting to look at little bits here, or, you know, an uncommon or a common or something like that? I know out of Modern Horizons 2, I still need to pick up a couple uncommons for my discard deck just to make sure that I can try to improve my outlet to be able to get cards in my graveyard for value. And these are 10-cent cards, but I can still be excited about them. And yeah, it's just so much to try to deal with.
Cards that I get most excited for, I find when new sets come out, are the commons and the uncommons. I mean, we all look at the rares and the mythic. I mean, that's where we gravitate, right? Those cards are the splashiest, they have the biggest abilities in many cases, but there are lots of commons and uncommons that are pretty crazy, right? So I know I mentioned my Noyan Dar deck, and just recently Modern Horizons 2 gave me an indestructible blue-white land in the Razor Tide Bridge. Mm. In Noyan Dar, when you cast a spell, you turn a land into a creature, and the indestructible lands, there's not many of them, are fantastic, right? So you got Darksteel Citadel and Cascading Cataracts, but we just got to add the indestructible artifact land. Or from Strixhaven, there's the sorcery Solve the Equation. Search your library for an instant or a sorcery and put it in your hand for 3. Well, I'm playing a Spellslinger deck, and I play a lot of cards that bounce non-land permanents, right? Mm-hmm. So I can use Solve the Equation. And these are cards that, you know, you don't initially think, oh, this is perfect for this deck. You know, I have to read the card 2, 3, 4 times. But when there's a new set coming out every 2 months, it feels, right? You have a lot of cards to constantly look at.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so many cards. And especially when we keep getting these specialty sets and whatnot, and then we're going to be getting 2 sets in the wintertime, or, you know, fall, winter. Oh, man, so many cards to keep track of. And then with all the secret lairs, every now and then there's something interesting coming out there. Well, you got to keep that on your radar, too. Yeah, being a creator is not easy.
It's not, and I it's a challenge. But I would say I wouldn't give it up for anything. I love doing it, and I certainly love getting new cards every every couple of months. It feels like spoiler season really never ends. But taking a look at cards and adding them to decks and playing with new splashy spells is always fun. So it might not be easy to edit as many decks as I have. I think right now I've got like 30 decks built.
I'm slowly getting there.
Listen, once you start building that commander collection, it feels like once you start getting some of those cards that people refer to as quote unquote staples. I know I'm not a huge fan of that term because I like playing hipster decks, right? We've heard of hipster decks as the ones that aren't played as often as others.
Like half of my decks, I suppose.
Sure. I just built Captain Vargas Wrath from Commander Legends. I wanted to build a pirate deck, so I decided to pick the least built pirate deck of them all. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun to play recently. But it's not something where I immediately look at it and go, oh, I know exactly what strategy is in every single one of my 30 decks at every single minute of the day, and I know where to put it. So I like to spend a lot of time a couple of months after a set comes out, still looking back, right? So I'm still looking at Strixhaven. I'm still looking at Commander 21 because it came out so quickly. But even Zendikar Rising and Commander Legends, I mean, there's still so much unexplored territory there with just content creation in general. And I would like to get back to making more actual edited gameplay games with commanders that might have been overlooked just because of the sheer volume of legendary creatures that we're getting, right? To kind of show them off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say this much right now. If you ever need someone who has built decks that no one understands or they've never heard of the commander before, you have someone right here. I have so many decks. I mean, effectively right now, I did an episode not that long ago with, I brought Magical Hacker on. And we talked about a list that he had curated of commanders with less than 50 decks to their name on EDH Rec. And not really my surprise, I'd built four of them. Now I have them just sitting over here with the rest of my Magic collection. And I built some of those because I wanted a challenge. Honestly, I built my Kothaved deck originally because certain people said the card was unplayable. And I said, really? And that's why I built it.
Yeah, no, that deck is a lot of fun. The one thing I remember, the one thing I know about Kothaved is that I read a post one time where somebody that played clearly their main deck was a Kothaved deck said that after Smothering Tithe came out, the deck was unplayable. Like we were going to see Smothering Tithe in every deck, although it is very widely played. I know that with Smothering Tithe, right, doesn't Kothaved you lose life if someone sacks something?
You lose a life and you draw a card, but again, if you're playing in mono black, I have ways to get around it. I mean, I played a game a month or two ago over with EDH Social Contract where I machine gunned the table, including myself, using that trigger. So what ended up happening there, it's really funny, actually. I really want to talk about this really quickly. Since you have experienced that deck before and what it can do in a burst scenario, ended up having another player, MTG Strategist, actually, it took me a moment to remember, brought out a couple of cloning pieces and then had a few doubling season type effects. So ended up with enough plant tokens that even Microsoft Excel couldn't handle that many numbers. Not infinite, just couldn't handle the 156 billion or whatever plant tokens were out there. And then we're all going to die. Got to do something. I have Kothaved on the field, dropped Psychosis Crawler, dropped Reaver Demon. We all die. It blew up every token on that side of the field. Everyone lost 156 trillion life or whatever instantly, and I drew 156 trillion cards. And yeah, we all died a very painful death right there. So yeah, it's sometimes fun to just try things like that. And that's not a deck I would have ever built before quarantine, but it's one of those kind of things where I have spent other episodes talking about my deck philosophy and how I build things. So I'm not going to get into that now, but I think just because of my content creation, because I've been working with creators like yourself and with my frequent collaborators, Mono Whiteboarder, Coach J-Row, the list goes on and on. I have learned to not only be a better player, but also to really try new things. My Kothaved deck was trying something different. It works. fairly similarly to how a lot of the other decks are run on EDH Rec, but I've thrown in my own funny little twists here and there to really personalize that deck. And a lot of the other decks that I've worked on more recently, they're trying to buck the trend. I mean, right now, I actually posted this earlier today. I just got a Najeela in the mail with the idea that how can I totally unbreak this card to the point where it's almost not even the Najeela deck. It's almost something entirely different. What have I not done before that could be an interesting challenge? So when I drop this card on the table, just, okay, it's not going to be this EDH product. It's not going to be a Warrior Tribal. It's something completely different. And I feel like challenging myself in deck building is really interesting. And then obviously as a creator, I just like talking about how I like challenging those assumptions. It's really, I feel like it's really become my brand, I suppose, is trying to take the normal conventions of Commander and then trying to twist them into knots in so many fun, delightful ways.
Yeah. You know, speaking of like pet cards or specific things that you like to play that change things up, you know, I realize that I like to throw a lot of weird strategy cards into my Commander decks, and I think it just livens up games when people get to see cards that they don't see. And I realize I've been editing my decks to start to do that more often and playing cards that are off the wall or cards I wouldn't normally play, just to kind of see what else is out there, right? In the way that I'm evolving as an actual brewer or editor of Commander content.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely comes into our content, too. I mean, how we play Magic definitely impacts how we talk about the game in our podcast. I know that my changes in how I build and play decks has definitely influenced how I've taken the channel. I know that I've picked up so many interesting tips from, again, mentioning Mono White Board and Coach J-Ro. I built Mono White because I've had them on the show so often talking about Mono White that I was inspired to try to build something interesting out of that. So it's really interesting just hearing and thinking about how I have changed and how my podcast, my creation has been so impacted so positively just by speaking with people and playing more games.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I know you mentioned Mono White Border, and honestly, looking at all of their content, I have never wanted to build a Mavinda Students Advocate deck more in my life than after reading some of their notes on it. But I used to have a Mono White deck. I played Heliod Suncrowned for a little while there, and I thought about playing some other mono white decks at one point, and it just really never got to the point where I actually ended up building one. But Mavinda seems like such a fun deck. I've played against God Eternal Oketra decks. I've played against Sram Senior Edificer decks, but it's a route that I haven't explored, or a strategy I haven't explored enough. And I think my first mono white deck was the Nahiri the Lithomancer deck, mm-hmm. that came out with Commander. Is that 2014? I think it was Commander 2014.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I never really went back to, you know, check it out, but I certainly have learned a lot from the community, and things that I never initially thought were something that I wanted to build or a strategy that I wanted to play, after reading articles or Twitter posts or blogs, I say to myself all the time, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that. I really want to do this now. I want to play one game with that deck. It just seems like so much fun.
Yeah, I've definitely done that too, where I've had very short-lived decks that have only played one or two games. They did the thing, I had fun, but you know, they didn't really scratch that itch for me. But the ones that have gotten through and are still together as a deck, I've got some really bizarre strategies, and I'm going to try to make that Najeela deck just weird. In some ways, it's like that's the last thing you're going to ever expect coming from that commander. So, yeah, definitely stay tuned on that one if I can figure out what exactly I'm going to do with that. It's still kind of a challenge. I'm digging through the box to see what I can find. But I would like it to not be like anything else on EDH Rec. I'd like to be that guy with that Najeela deck that does that weird thing. I'd like to be the guy who has the mono white deck that no one's ever heard of, but people will hear of eventually. Yeah, I've got a mono white brew for you that, yeah, it's something. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's something.
Can't wait to see it. Yeah, those are always fun when someone talks about a deck and they go, oh my gosh, I know MJ has this deck, it's really great, let's take a look at, you know, that's when you know you've made it with a deck, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. That and I feel like even in my own play group, that's kind of what you get too, is that you know each other's decks so well that, you know, anytime I try to bring a new deck in there, it's, you don't know what this does, I don't know what this is going to do either, but that's really what's fun about this whole thing, is I'm trying something very different. And just in as far as the creation is concerned, that has just opened up the realm of possibility for me as a player and as a creator, just to think about, hey, I have this niche, I love talking about it, and then be able to bring like-minded people on the show to just talk about how we love this format. There is no end of things we can talk about on EDH, because it goes in any direction you want it to. You just have to want to will it into existence.
Exactly. And, you know, I think, you know, another thing I know I mentioned earlier, getting organized has really helped with content creation and balancing, you know, work life and actually just playing the game. But, I also think specifically being social has really helped the game. Even if you're just not playing the game, just talking to other people, networking has really been great. I know networking sounds like such a corporate term, but just networking magic just feels like making new friends. So like networking is really just making new friends, you know, meeting folks like Subi, Pixie, Tap That MTG, Mr. Big Bents. All these folks that we've started, you know, communicating with, it's really helped to help us with our content, right? Because just hanging out with you folks is benefiting our content, right? So we know that we're not certainly talking every single day, but I like to make time to talk with the community and other creators, because it helps us, right, to grow together. And I think that we learn from each other pretty well, honestly.
Yeah. I know that I would not be anywhere near this level of creation or of just interest in the podcast had I not started to bring guests on the show. It helped reinvigorate my interest in doing the podcast, because I just wanted to talk to people about Magic. It's one of the things that has really kept me going through this quarantine period, where we haven't really had a lot of other things going on that have been positive lately. And Magic has been kind of one of those things where I've been able to cling to it as it's something to think about that's, you know, doesn't relate with a global issue. It's basically just a game that's always going to be there, at least feels like it's always going to be there. Right. And no matter where you end up in 5 to 10 years, if you end up moving out of town, there are people there who play the game too. So being part of this greater community has definitely helped inspire me to really work on my content and really try to figure out, what do people want to listen to, but also what do I really want to talk about? Because honestly, what I've really learned about this is, if you don't enjoy it, then you may not be interested in continuing. So you really have to enjoy what you're doing to feel like it's worth it. And when you do enjoy what you do, when you do bringing people on, like I have for the last many months here, it really makes this a lot more fun and a lot less like work.
Yeah, not every episode is a winner. I will say that. Not with everyone. We've certainly recorded episodes and have been, you know, we've posted it and gone, you know, what we had envisioned for that episode is not what we ended up producing, just because maybe the idea wasn't there, or it was still in the workshop phase, or maybe it just didn't turn out how we thought. Whatever the reason was, right? And then there's some episodes where you finish recording and you go, I could have talked about that for like 3 more hours. Like I had so much more to say, right? But you know, we're an hour long podcast, just under an hour, so you know, we do cap ourselves. And it makes a difference, right? So bringing in folks like you said to chat makes it all that much better. And the topic itself really matters to whether or not the episode is fun and whether or not you want to continue, right? If I had to do, if recording a podcast was anything like going to school, there were some classes that I was in, and I was like, if I have to go to this class one more time, I swear to God. But
I feel content, you on that one.
Yeah, there's some content that's just like, I'm doing this because the degree says I have to take this class, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what the program says, and that's the only reason that I'm in accounting right now. Like, I would literally never take an accounting class. It's just not for me. But talking about magic all day long, that's a lot of fun. I could totally do that.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it has become a really big part of my life. It was starting to get there before the pandemic, but it's really become that way, especially since I became a creator, because now I feel like I can really hang my hat on that and eventually maybe someday really be able to put faces with names of people I've met online in the greater community when we eventually can start going back to events. I know we were talking about that in the pre-show, that yes, content is a lot of work, but when we eventually can start getting together again, the number of friends we've made and the contacts we've made, I think that right there is something that's really going to last. It's a weird byproduct of this whole pandemic, but I think that our world has definitely increased in size exponentially as creators because of just all the people we've interacted with over the last year who we may not have interacted with previously.
Exactly. And when GP Andy's house happens, or Magic Fest Andy's house happens, I will make sure you get the invite.
All right. I will definitely do so. Who knows? I may end up actually moving closer to Michigan someday. So if that happens, I'll definitely make sure to see all of the great Michigan people out there, including yourself. But also all including right. Coach J-Ro, too, because I can't go more than like 10 minutes without talking about him. He is just that great.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, again, you did mention about an hour-long podcast. I think we've hit that point. So I think we're going to wrap up this episode on content creation, the fun of magic, and everything else in between. I think we're going to wrap it up. It's been great having you. Where can people find the Guardian Project podcast again?
Hey, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. So I, again, one half of the Guardian Project podcast. We record episodes every week. You can find us wherever podcasts are found. We are on Twitter at Guardian Pod. You can check out our website, guardianprojectpodcast.com, or check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/TheGuardianProject.
All right, sounds good. And you can find the entire back catalog of the MTG in Quarantine podcast on all the usual podcast outlets, including MTGcast and Player FM more recently. So if you want to find me on there, now I'm available on there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. If you see the very happy-looking Ulamog with the headphones, you know you found the right place. So again, yeah, thanks for being on here. It's been great having you.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was wonderful. And thank you for collaborating. We're certainly going to have to get some more games in soon.
Oh, definitely. And at some point, if you ever need another guest on the podcast, I'd be more than willing to just get on the mic and talk about whatever.
Sounds great.
All right. So for Andy and everyone else on the MTG in Quarantine channel, my name's MJ. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.